Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It's program number 735, and it's January the 6th, 1986. I don't usually make local. There is a musician who's in this country now. He's going to be in the Bay Area, and he may be traveling around, I'm sure he is, around the rest of the country. His name is Dick Gauphin. G-A-U-G-H-N, and you may want to take the opportunity to hear him. I imagine he'll be mostly at small clubs in the various larger cities of the United States and some not so large. A listener to World Watchers turned me on to him, sent me a record of his, quite revolutionary. One song's on revolution and one on prisoners, and very sympathetic in the political sense and an activist of his own sort. And in Germany, when he was performing, he had some kind of a throat infection or disease, and there was a question of whether he would ever be able to sing again. Obviously, he's recovered. He'll be in the Bay Area at the Great American Music Hall the week of January 21st in San Francisco, and he's going to be in Santa Cruz at Moraga Hall Wednesday, January 22nd, and I'm going to try and attend and to hear him. It was really a surprise that I saw that he would be so close to home base here. And I was interested in how he recovered and what he's been doing since he got sick in Germany. The newspapers this past week have had stories about a new book coming out regarding John Paul Getty, the oil man. The book is by Robert Lenzer, L-E-N-Z-E-R, and it's called The Great Getty. And in the process of writing it, Lenzer sent to Washington under Freedom of Information and got files on Mr. Getty, and discovered that he had a what he calls a flirtation with Adolf Hitler, that he supported, his ideas supported Hitler's, that he was sympathetic to the Nazis, and that J. Edgar Hoover had documents dated December 18th, 1941, on whether or not to have some time internal security or rounding up, apprehending of John Paul Getty. Getty, in his memos and diaries, was sympathetic to the invasion of Czechoslovakia, the invasion of Poland. He considered Hitler a very strong man, and which he was. And there were allegations, evidently, that he sold oil to the Germans in Mexico. Now, John Paul Getty is gone, but there are stories that his son, John Paul Getty Jr., was closely linked, not only stories, but absolutely true, to Otto von Bolschwing, the head of the Iron Guard, the Romanian Iron Guard of the SS. And also, Klaus von Bülow has been employed by Mr. Getty's son, having the same proclivities or interest in Nazis. Von Bülow's name became prominent because of his wife being in a coma and the two trials for attempted murder charges on his wife. Von Bülow allegedly was the ring boy at Hermann Göring's wedding, and Mr. Getty, the father, was, saying that he knew Hitler and knew Göring, and that he was sympathetic psychologically and also assisting them, evidently, during the war effort. Von Bülow is moving to Europe, but he's in the employ of John Paul Getty's son. In 1981, I learned that Frank Turpel and Edwin Wilson were on the West Coast working with a firm called Stanford Technology, and realizing how high up they were in the intelligence community, I called Pete Carey in San Jose at the San Jose Mercury, spoke to him, and he did a long article, November the 20th, 1981. In case there's new listeners and you don't have this, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, and I'll give you a copy of this article. It's called Ex-Nazi's Brilliant U.S. Career, Strangled in a Web of Lies. And among other things, it tells how this man from the Waffen-SS, who then went to work for our CIA, worked with a corporation called TCI. One of the board of directors was John Paul Getty Jr., the son of the oil billionaire who was sympathetic to Hitler. And von Bolschwing was made president of the corporation in 1970. And this article goes into all the close affiliations in the Bay Area, particularly to von Bolschwing, and also the international connections and the national. It involves Thomas Franzioli, a banker to the Boston Cabot family, and money went for Otto von Bolschwing traveling in Europe through the First National Bank of Boston, that's been in the news recently, and Warner Lambert Pharmaceuticals' Mr. Elmer Bobst was the fellow who pushed Richard Nixon's career. Nixon lost to John Kennedy, and Elmer Bobst and Warner Lambert were pushing Nixon's career. And, of course, as soon as Kennedy's head was blown off, Nixon eventually then became president. In 1950, it had Nicolae Maloxa, the Iron Guard, of the Romanian Iron Guard, brought to his office in Whittier, and Otto von Bolschwing was the head of the Romanian Iron Guard, and he was Adolf Eichmann's superior. Among other people that he had working with him at TCI was a woman named Helene von Damm, who for 8 years was the secretary, in quotes, to Ronald Reagan, the right-hand woman under and with Ronald Reagan in California. Then she went on to work in Washington with the transition teams and appointments, and then became ambassador to Austria. So the links of Getty and the father to Hitler didn't end with that one time period, but the head of the Galen operation, Reinhard Galen's operation, Hitler's Eastern Intelligence chief, was taken over by von Bolschwing when Galen went back to Germany, and he traveled with the Cabot Manufacturing Company. The Cabot Lodge family were part of the von Bolschwing network, and it was Henry Cabot Lodge who ran against John Kennedy as vice president with Richard Nixon. And all the people involved in the murder of John Kennedy, or the cover-up, or the pushing of politicians that would replace the Kennedys to keep the Nazi network intact, are pretty well described in this one long article by Pete Carey. Also in the Washington Times, there's a story by Georgie Ann Geyer this week, Von Damm Without Regrets, and it's telling how that she's going to step down as the ambassador to Austria as of the first of the year. Now she took on her fourth husband. She says, my third husband, I never really lived with him when I got here. And she tells how she fell in love with this well-known person from Austria, and she has been asked to give up her position as the ambassador to Austria. Nancy Reagan didn't like her having four husbands and dumping the third one and switching as soon as she got to Vienna. But Helene von Damm was brought to this country by a man of military intelligence known as William Clark, who then went on to be a justice on the Supreme Court in California thanks to the Reagan appointment, the National Security Advisor in Washington, and now I think he's waiting for a Supreme Court job. And Helene von Damm and Otto von Bolschwing are closely connected, of course, to the Waffen-SS of the current time, and the Nazis, and the father of this Getty was sympathetic and assisting Adolf Hitler during the war. So after the war, one of the top Nazis of the entire world, who was not apprehended or even considered a war criminal, came to California and influenced Ronald Reagan and had a literal babysitter in his offices and took care of the connections that Ronald Reagan had, which were escalating towards Edward Teller and the future Star Wars and the race to control the world. Now, speaking of Vienna, a subscriber to World Watcher sent me out of Minneapolis an article from their newspaper on their governor, Rudy Perpich, P-E-R-P-I-C-H. He's taken several trips to Austria, where he has been visiting Helene von Damm, the current ambassador, and the state of Minnesota is ready to take a 11th century castle that would be given to the University of Minnesota. All they have to do is to put $4 million to renovate it, and Mr. Perpich has been going back and forth. Several of the people in his own state say he isn't taking care of our farms and our conditions here, but he has a necessity to go back to Vienna. As I say, he's made several trips and met with von Damm, so that America is getting international in the sense that our governors are ready to buy castles in Austria and keep this contact. The von Damm link to von Bolschwing is still continuous, I am sure, just because she's not ambassador. Vienna is a very important part of American politics, and I even question the shooting at the Vienna airport or whether it was a provocateur setup, which we are so great at doing. And as we broaden out and incorporate these Germans into our system continuously since World War II, now the state of Minnesota will have a castle, which is a great place for going back and forth with bag money payoffs, international connections, because the network of the Odessa is not over, but maintaining castles in places like Austria, American people buying castles for a particular state, this can go on continuously and be a wonderful nest of espionage. Speaking of espionage, Richard von Weizsäcker, the president of Germany, asked this past week over Christmas that Rudolf Hess, the former Nazi leader, be released from Spandau Prison. He's all heart. His father was the liaison of the Vatican to Adolf Hitler. He's the current president of Germany that set up with Helmut Kohl the Bitburg ceremony honoring the Waffen-SS. And now he's asking that we plead for the release of Rudolf Hess. Another person that wanted Hess released was Larry McDonald, and Soldier of Fortune last month had an article how the mercenaries could release Hess. I'll do one whole hour on Hess very soon because he's a very interesting person. He actually flew to Scotland and wanted to go to Britain in 1941, and America wasn't at war, and yet he's locked up as a war criminal. He says he had nothing to do with what went on afterwards, and he has been kept locked up for 44 years. But he's a symbol because he was there flying over to England and Scotland to coax Great Britain to combine with Germany and invade the Soviet Union. And for all this time, he's the last prisoner at Spandau, and there's even a question of whether it's Hess. But while von Weizsäcker, he threw in release Mandela and in South Africa and let Hess out and Andrei Sakharov. Hess and can't be a propaganda tool much longer, but he's a hero to people like Willis Cardo and the far, far right, and to the new Soldier of Fortune operations that want to see him out. And so he asked for Mandela to be released, which would be impossible, and to egg on the Soviet Union with Sakharov. He's concerned about individuals. But while the president of Germany is allegedly concerned at that level, the Los Angeles Times had a long article November 21st. West Germany Chancellor Helmut Kohl met with American Jewish leaders last month to reassure them that the new Germany would not abandon its special interests with the state of Israel, but assurances are deceiving because in a secret deal last May, just at the time of Bitburg, West Germany authorized the direct sale to Saudi Arabia of 105 MMs and 155 MM artillery. The artillery is used by NATO as a tactical nuclear weapon delivery system. In addition, German industry will build a huge factory for the production of munitions for this artillery, as well as the 120mm Leopard 2 tank cannon. The total cost for the deal is $3.5 billion that Germany is building, sending to Saudi Arabia. Helmut Kohl met with the Jewish leaders in New York. He assured them that the Leopard 2 would not be sold to Saudi Arabia, but he went ahead and made the deal anyway. And in addition to that, Great Britain is taking a contract for a mammoth amount of weapons to be sent to Saudi Arabia and the enemies of Israel. The LA Times has a story, President Reagan's visit to Bitburg Cemetery early this year and Kohl's honoring of the SS war dead there is burned in the public mind. And even with the late West German Minister of State Alois Mertes' statement in February to the Wiesenthal Center that Bonn would not encourage Reagan to visit a concentration camp, there were fears that Germany was embarking on a new course. But what Bitburg really meant to the United States and Israel has now been an open question because Germany is ready and making deals to send to Saudi Arabia these weapons that could wipe out Israel. So Mr. von Weizsäcker hasn't changed much, and the Gettys haven't changed much in their alignment with the people that were continuous in the past wars, or the last great war, these people lining up with Adolf Hitler. The New Times, which is Reverend Moon's paper, has a story, a Cold War story written by Tom Bethel. For those of you who don't know the name, it's not a household word. They said he's a contributing editor of Harper and a Washington editor of the American Spectator. Tom Bethel also worked for National Review for Mr. Buckley, William Buckley, and he writes for Reverend Moon's paper, but He is the fellow that came to mind the desk of Jim Garrison when Clay Shaw had been arrested. And when I met him in New Orleans and saw him for 3 days and came home, I said to Jim, you have a CIA man at your desk. And I mentioned Tom Bethel and also Bill Boxley. And I said, you're in danger. And Bethel has worked his way up to be far, far right. He had infiltrated and helped blow the case in many, many ways of Jim Garrison's arrest of Clay Shaw. And now he's writing an article about the Soviet Union, and it's titled, Look for a Return of the Cold War. I don't know where the Cold War ever went away. And he says the Soviet Union will have verbal hostilities against Reagan, and they're angry about the Strategic Defense Initiative. And it's a very anti-Soviet article with a lot of generalities, but Tom Bethel is the author of that article. Also, in the Washington Times, there's amazing stories in that paper, believe it or not. There's an article about José Sarney, the president of Brazil, and how the military are trying to kick him out and how his life is really in danger moment by moment. And there's a trial that's going to take place of a journalist who killed a gentleman, Mario Eugenio. It was the journalist that was killed. And how this trial is upsetting Brazil, and it could cause a coup there. And I'll do more about that murder later. That was in November of 84. The murder took place. And Brazil's president, José Sarney, who saw what happened to Tancredo Neves, the man who would be president when Sarney was vice president, how he never was sworn in and died. And now he's saying that there's problems there and that the military at any moment could overthrow that country. In the New York Times Magazine section and in the book review sections of various newspapers, there is a full-page ad, The Public Interest. It's a magazine that comes out quarterly, or five times a year, and their next issue is a large article by Peter Drucker. That's the fellow that I said brought Fritz Kramer to the United States, and Fritz Kramer then lined up with Henry Kissinger. And the next issue is going to be on the problems of corporate takeovers, what is to be done. Now, Peter Drucker's name is well known among the multinational corporations, but I see it more and more, and in this one ad, his name is mentioned seven or eight times, and he's writing about corporate takeover, and I cited his name just about a month or so ago as being the granddaddy behind the multinationals, creating them larger than countries, that took place after World War II, aligning these countries with the powers of a peanut and the corporations being the determining factor of the country, shrinking the country down to the dollars and cents of the corporate control of those individual countries. The reason I mentioned Von Damme and Peter Drucker and their name in the news is that another name surfaced in the news just this last month. I haven't put it on the air yet, but now's the time. The well-known Fritz Kramer that I talk about all the time, I think one of the most dangerous men in the world. I wish he were photographed, but this is the first time I can recall his name being in public, considering all the influences he's had. And it's on a full-page ad of the New York Times, December the 9th, if you want to go to the library. And it's also in the Washington Times, the Moon Paper, December the 10th, and it's titled The London Declaration. And the idea behind it is, on November 25th, a panel of internationally recognized experts on strategic affairs from the United States and Europe convened in London under the auspices of the International Security Council. This isn't the American Security Council. This is the International Security Council to consider the implications of the Reagan-Gorbachev meeting. And it's a very important full-page story, but the interesting thing about it is that the International Security Council is a moon organization. It's run by the Moonies, and the names that put the ad in the paper that are listed are very important in terms of positions and policies of the very far right wing. And the name that came to attention, somebody, as a matter of fact, called me and said, wait till you see the paper this morning, because the name on there that was signed was that of Fritz Kramer, the man, as I say, that was brought over by Peter Drucker and then secured Henry Kissinger for the role that he had with at Elmer-Amagow with the top Nazis after the war, and was influential in putting him with Otto Skorzeny and Klaus Barbie, and it seems that that relationship never did end. It was continuous. So the ad has the various names. There's one, the paper rattling here. It's a full page of the newspaper. It's International Security Council, signed by Mr. Antonio Betancourt, is the vice president of the group. And then there's other names here. Fritz Kramer describes himself on the board of this group, former strategy advisor to U.S. Army Chief of Staff. It is very important that Fritz Kramer comes out publicly in a Reverend Moon front organization because of the implications of Reverend Moon and his connections to Licio Gelli of the P2, of Reverend Moon, and I mentioned last week the relationship of him and his organization to Klaus Barbie and the Cocaine Kings and the dictatorship in Argentina. So Fritz Kramer has surfaced. Not only has he shared offices with Daniel Graham of the Strategic Trade, they call themselves a cover group like Strategic Trade, but Daniel Graham is the head of the High Frontier and the SDI, the First Strike Space Star War Operation. So what we have is a Kramer identified with Moon and other organizations such as CAUSA. This is put together by CAUSA, so it won't look like a religious organization. And his name finally appears here. It's an interesting time to surface because people like Peter Drucker and, of course, Kissinger is always visible, and Kramer feels safe and always will be to be in the papers the same week at the same time. Helene von Damm and the whole team all surface continuously at the same time, but this is the first time Kramer's name has been here, and that's what makes it so interesting. Now, the Washington Post has a story, this is November the 1st, 1985, about the arms procurement and the arms control, and Sven Kramer, the son of Fritz Kramer, is the new arms control director, if you can believe it, representing the White House before the Geneva conference. Now, Mr. Betancourt, as is the vice president, he has an address on Fifth Avenue, and I'll put it on the sheets that accompany this broadcast, the address and the telephone number, if you want information or literature from them. And if you want, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope if you don't subscribe to the weekly tapes and you take this off the air, and I'll give you the information about this organization that is a Mooney organization, the International Security Council. Now, what this statement doesn't say is that they are affiliated with Reverend Moon and are part of CAUSA with Bohai Pak, the liaison to the death squads in South America, the drug traffic, the international drug traffic, the World Anti-Communist League. The entire statement here is praising Reagan for bringing up the struggle of Afghanistan, Angola, Cambodia, Ethiopia, Nicaragua. Nothing about having a safer world with less arms, of course, but representing the cause of freedom. And it says the West must never compromise or retreat from the basic right to self-defense. This was Hitler's thing about invading Poland or Czechoslovakia to defend himself. And they called upon people to understand how strong Reagan was in his summit meeting, that he could stand up to the Russians. And they were glad that he had this strong posture and that he shouldn't let it fall down on the wayside, of course. They applauded him and said that the United States can't afford any illusions about the nature of the USSR. And I'm wondering if America has any illusions about the nature of the Germany we're talking about, the one where Weizsäcker wants to let Mr. Rudolf Hess out, and they're sending weapons to Saudi Arabia that can wipe out Israel at the same time. And here is Fritz Kramer from Germany working himself up to a position, and with the Mooney organization with Daniel Graham, talking about the nature of Russia when people very hardly know the understanding of the intent of the Germans to continue the Thousand-Year Reich and take over the world, and the world includes the United States. They said, we support Reagan's stand on strategic defense and so forth, and we welcome his support of the struggle against communist oppression. and the president made it clear he will not break faith with those fighting the cause of freedom. This is in the article. And the president of the International Security Council is Joseph Churba, C-H-U-R-B-A. He's a retired Air Force colonel. James T. Hackett, editor of the National Security Record, part of the Heritage Foundation. Leopold Labez, who's the editor of a magazine called Survey from the United Kingdom, and he's part of a group called the Resistance International. He's also a member of the Committee for the Free World and also part of a group, the initials IEDSS, the Institute for Strategic Defense Studies. Those are the short initials for that title. Melvin Lasky is mentioned here. He's the editor of a publication called Encounter. He's part of the Resistance International, run by Mr. Bukowski, and works out of Freedom House and backs the aid to the Contras. He's a member of the Committee for a Free World, a board member of that, and part of IDSS, the Institute for Strategic Defense and Studies, on the Advisory Council of the Heritage Think Tank Group, and an advisory board position of the Reason Foundation. Now, just last week or the week before, I mentioned that 11 people from the Heritage Foundation are now advising the State Department. Also among this group is Ambassador Charles Lichtenstein, former deputy U.S. Representing the U.S. at the United Nations. He's from the Central Intelligence Agency and worked closely with Gene Kirkpatrick, lambasting the Soviet Union and lying about the Korean airline and the spy plane situation when it went down. John Lulis is a part of this group. He's director for Center Research and Information. He's from Greece. Joseph Luns, former Secretary General of NATO from the Netherlands, and then the new NATO chief after him became Lord Carrington, who is a member of the board and first founder with Henry Kissinger of Kissinger Associates. And, of course, Kissinger is the protege of this Fritz Kramer, brought into military intelligence and been close with him ever since 1943 when they combined their act. Air Vice Marshal S. Manal, M-E-N-A-U-L, he's a member of the Board of Research Consultants, which is part of the Mooney Group. He's a consultant to the Foreign Office of the Research Institute, run by members of WACL, the World Anti-Communist League, and Frank Murkowski of the United States Senate, and Martin Sicker, Senior Vice President of the International Security Council, CAUSA, the Moon Group. Those are the names here, but the interesting thing was the Fritz Kramer name on this, because I have not seen it in print, and I believe this is a first, but I'm sure he feels very secure to appear at this time. Now, just this past week, along with Kramer's name associated with the Moon Organization, CAUSA, Jack Anderson had an article on Taiwan's influence. That's run by the son of Chiang Kai-shek and Chiang Ranit after he fled the mainland of China and set up with Reverend Moon, the World Anti-Communist League, which combines the Nazi Network, the Odessa Network, and the Death Squads with John Singh Laub of our own military. And Jack Anderson wrote about Taiwan's influence. He said there is a strong Oriental influence in the ambitious psychological warfare being waged against all leftists in Latin America. The two sources of this bizarre trans-Pacific cooperation are the government of Taiwan and CAUSA International. That's where Fritz Kramer comes in, on the board of the CAUSA, a group set out by Moon and CAUSA. The latter is a political movement run by former South Korean CIA Colonel Bohai Pak, longtime right-hand man to Reverend Sun Myung Moon. The United States may be providing the money that fuels the Salvadorian government's fight against the leftists, but the real expertise comes from Taiwan. This is the word of a Salvadorian military authority. The Taiwanese are the real masters of anti-communist defense. The nationalist Chinese regime on Taiwan was established by the late Chiang Kai-shek 30 years ago when he was driven off the mainland by Mao. They're experts in survival, also with millions and millions of dollars of American money and intelligence money and funding for Taiwan for his survival, or he wouldn't last an hour. And he's teaching now how to combat communism in Central America and training the troops that go back to Central America. Between Reverend Moon and Taiwan, they're helping to destroy the native population's rights in Central America. I'll take a one-minute break and go back to this article by Jack Anderson, because it is important now to put Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer into the Mooney Causa camp, identified with these front organizations because of the relationship to Daniel Graham and Star Wars, and to the Nazis of the past war and the current Nazis. As I say, we'll take a one-minute break and continue with this story.